Well, I would say that if your current CPA is not providing tax information on a regular basis and not asking you questions on a regular basis, are you doing this? Have you thought about that? Then it's time to find a new CPA. CPAs can be invaluable to small businesses.
Welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise podcast. If you would like to listen in on thought-provoking conversations with countercultural thought leaders and experts in the fields of wealth, health, and relationships, the three keys to having what I call a wealthy, wealthy life, then this is the show for you. I'm Christina Wise, real estate investor, best-selling author of Falling for Money, and founder of Wealthy Wealthy, where I serve as your personal guide to money, health, and happiness.
Welcome back to this edition of Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise. In this interview, I talk to Barbara Weltman. Barbara is an author of several books on a subject we all probably need a little help with, taxes. I was particularly interested in this conversation because I was just given a tax bill by the IRS. The reason why is because taxes, even though I'm in the money business and I'd say a financial expert, overall, taxes is the one thing I've not liked. I've abdicated. I've just put off to the CPA and I didn't pay attention to it because I thought the CPA would have it handled. And with anything when it comes to money, hint, hint, we have to be accountable. We have to be responsible. We cannot abdicate our money to the tax planners, to the financial advisors, to the insurance agents, so on and so forth. We need to know the basic knowledge. And I just learned the hard way is when you abdicate, it can come with consequences, meaning the IRS comes and lays a big fat tax bill on you that you weren't expecting because the CPA miscalculated things. I really talked to her about the biggest mistakes small business owners, we as small business owners make when it comes to taxes. And she also talks about some of the new tax law that's just been put into place that we all need to be knowledgeable about. And overall, it's just a really great informative conversation. So if you want to have a little information or maybe even inspiration when it comes to taxes to be a little bit more knowledgeable, then you'll want to listen in. And just so everybody listening, that's my personal goal. I even talk about it in this conversation, is to get better at taxes. I've ordered three of her books already. I am more than halfway through two of them. I'm going to be signing up to her email list and just getting, you know, with a goal to get as good as I need to get when it comes to taxes without anything crazy. So again, I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. Thank you.
Well, Barbara, it is so much fun to be here with you today. And I actually have several reasons for wanting to talk to you and connect with you. One, because you're a woman in finance, which I love. You're an author of several books that I can't wait to tell my listeners about. Three, you're a tax strategist and a tax authority and just a tax expert, I guess. So we all need a little bit of help with taxes. And then finally, just personally, I actually was just given a notice from the IRS that I owe a lot of money, and I thought that I was sweeping and preparing for my taxes just fine, but I come to find out that my CPA really wasn't doing anything but probably TurboTax. I just realized that I was really upset by that, but then I thought, I'm accountable. Like, this is my money. Why am I abdicating? I don't abdicate any other part of my money to anyone. So why am I abdicating my taxes to the tax accountant, you know, through the CPA and not knowing anything myself? Hence, it's not his money, it was my money. So I need to be the one responsible for this and at least know more than I know. So anyway, I can't wait to have our conversation and to pick your brain a little bit and share that with everybody else because I'm now eager to learn. Taxes are that one thing in the money category that I just did not want to pay attention to. And as anything, it's come back to bite me, that putting my head in the sand. So thank you for being here today. I did order, I'm already more than halfway through this book, 101 Tax Deductions or Tax Breaks for 2018. And you can see, I mean, I've got it dog-eared and annotated and yeah. So I feel sorry for him at my next CPA. Let's put it that way. And it's your fault. He or she can blame you in a good way. Anyway, so let's talk taxes. But before we do that, tell us a little bit about you. What's your background? How did you get into, you know, being an expert in this? And I'm sure there's some good story behind all your knowledge.
I'm an attorney and I practiced for many, many years. And all along I was writing and dealing primarily with small business clients. And I saw that the same questions kept coming up over and over again. So I started putting out a newsletter, Big Ideas for Small Business. And it's been more than 15 years that I've been doing the newsletter. I closed my practice, I relocated, and I devote my time now exclusively to writing and providing tax, financial, and legal information, primarily to small businesses, but also to consumers through the book that you just held up and through various resources. A lot of the information I provide is free through my website, barbarawelton.com. And I also do continuing education courses for accountants and attorneys. And I provide content and representation for a lot of Fortune 500 companies that want to speak to the small business community. Staples, United Healthcare, Toyota, the list goes on and on. So it's a fun thing for me. It's really exciting. I never know from day to day what new opportunities are going to come up. I just did something for Oracle. So there's always something going on.
How did you become such an expert in tax? It seems so complicated. I mean, you look at the tax code and then it's just changed again. And how do you stay on top of all this?
Well, that's the challenge and the fun, I guess, because every day is something new. And so I spend the first part of my day going through all my sources, checking out what's new from the IRS, from the courts, from government, Congress, and the other agencies. I sift through that. And then I provide every day, I post an idea of the day. I feel I'm doing a service to small business by going through all of this tremendous amount of content and just finding these nuggets and say a sentence or two, here's something that's coming up. Here's a new law. Here's a new regulation. For example, there's a change in obtaining business credit cards, a change in the rules and what information you had to provide. So if I provide a link or other information, I really feel like I'm doing a service. And I hear from small business owners across the country and consumers as well. And they're just so happy to have access to the information because running a business, who has time to go through everything?
And it's really simplifying it as well. What I like about your book that I ordered two books, almost through this one, and I'm halfway through the other one. So this one's 1001 Deductions and Tax Breaks 2018, and the other one's for small business. And I'm reading them both at the same time. But you really simplify and you give scenarios and examples and you make it easy to understand and to say, hey, that applies to me, that doesn't. So your work is just so well done and so needed because it is complicated and is the last thing that we have time for as small business owners.
Well, you bring up a really good point, which you mentioned earlier, and that is taxes are our responsibility. When it comes to small businesses, almost all small business owners use paid professionals to prepare their returns. But the challenge really is to know what the rules are so that you can make tax savvy decisions throughout the year. You can't wait until you file your return to know whether it's better if you buy or lease equipment or hire an employee or engage an independent contractor and what all that means to you and what you have to do when you've made your business decisions. So, and as you point out, to be able to ask good questions when you do meet with a tax advisor. And the same really goes for individuals. The new tax law, Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, did simplify a lot of things for a lot of individuals and made some important changes for businesses. And I think we all have to kind of stay up on all these new developments. And I'm working on next year's edition, which will reflect all of these tax changes.
Well, awesome. Well, let's go ahead and let's dive into this a little bit. So I would say probably a big majority of my listenership are small business owners. They're entrepreneurs, they're small business owners, they're in real estate. You know, many of them may be set up as sole proprietors one way or another, but for the most part, I'd say a heavy percentage that they do work for themselves one way or another. I'd like to talk about that a little bit. And first of all, how important is it to set up, let's say if you are a sole proprietor, how important is it to set up as some type of corporation, either or an LLC, like an LLC, an S corp, probably not a C corp, but a C corp as opposed to just really claiming to be a sole proprietor?
The primary driver in the decision to incorporate or form an LLC is not, it's not a tax motivated decision. It's really for personal liability protection, meaning that if something goes wrong in the business, only the business can be sued, not you personally, and therefore your personal assets, your home and your personal bank account and such are protected. So that's the primary consideration. But there are other considerations, and taxes is one of those other considerations. And there is an array of entity options that will give you personal liability protection, but each has different tax rules involved. And the decision on what your entity should be has become much more complicated following the recent tax legislation, because the new legislation has slashed the corporate tax rate for regular corporations, C corporations, to 21% flat rate. Whereas we know most small business owners own pass-through entities. They're either LLCs, S corporations, partnerships, or sole proprietorships, meaning they report their share of business income on their personal returns and pay taxes on their based on their personal tax rates and their personal tax picture. What the new law also did was create a new deduction, a 20% deduction for qualified business income for pass-through owners. So this is, individual tax rates have been dropped slightly, but not necessarily slashed to a flat 21% as for C corporations. But on the other hand, we have this new deduction. It's not a business deduction. It doesn't reduce your business profits. It's not an adjustment to gross income as we're so familiar with when it comes to taking your IRA write-offs or your health savings account deductions. It's not that kind of deduction. It's just a reduction to your taxable income. It comes off at the end in much the same way as itemized deductions or the standard deduction. So it's going to be a tax saver, but it's really complicated because there are so many limitations. You have to really jump through hoops. If your taxable income, not your business income or your adjusted gross income, but if your taxable income is below a threshold amount, then you just apply this flat 20% rate to your profits, your business profits, and that's a write-off. And so that could be a considerable tax savings to you, right? Depending on how profitable you are, what your income bracket is and such, your tax bracket rather. But if your taxable income is over a threshold amount, then the benefits start to phase out and can be eliminated entirely. And you may not, if you're really successful, you're not going to get any deduction. So you don't have that new, circling back to the original discussion of what, how to set up your business. It's really hard to tell at this time whether a C corporation now, after all these years, it was never in favor for small businesses, but now whether that's going to be a preferred entity choice versus an LLC or an S corporation. We have to see. And I don't think that anybody should be rushing ahead. We have to see. We're waiting for IRS guidance to clarify a lot of the rules related to the new deduction and many other provisions under the new law to see, and we'll have to kind of go through everything and then kind of make an overall decision.
Wow. Yeah, because that 21% is, that's a big difference.
It is tempting, but then as you probably know, when you have a corporation, to get the money out to a shareholder means that it's either going to come out as salary, which you're going to pay tax on your personal return, and employment taxes, or it's going to come out as dividends, which means you're going to pay tax on your personal return and the corporation doesn't deduct dividends. So it's a double tax in that sense. Of course, the new law didn't change the favorable tax rates on qualified dividends and long-term capital gains. So we still have either 0, 15%, or 20% rate, depending on where your income, your taxable income falls.
So is there any situation where you recommend people stay as a sole proprietorship?
A number of people who are now working in the gig economy, and they're doing this sideline very modestly, they're not doing a whole lot. Maybe they want to, for the moment, see where things are going. And rather than entail any additional cost in forming an entity and any additional administrative costs to this, maybe they just want to see. So if you're, for example, if you're a freelancer for Upwork and you're just bringing in a few dollars and it's not the kind of work that would entail any kind of personal liability, you're just providing content or web design or something, then maybe you want to take a wait and see approach. But certainly as the business grows, then maybe you do want to make a change. Of course, in addition to thinking about your entity choice, you can also protect yourself with insurance. So even if you are a sole proprietor, you can have insurance that will protect you. For example, let's say you have somebody come into your premises, you have liability insurance. We all know that professionals can have malpractice insurance and errors and omission coverage for other people, which can be a backstop to protecting your personal assets.
Yeah, I think a lot of the people I refer to, they're in real estate or they are freelancing but doing really well, or they may be what I call a solopreneur, meaning they're just themselves, but you know, they might be making $250,000 a year, but they're still set up as a sole proprietor.
As I said, it may be fine in particular situations, but I think the growing trend is that businesses do try to make an entity choice other than sole proprietorship. For example, with people who own real estate, typically these days, they usually have each separate property held by a different LLC so that if something happens to one property, it won't impact another property and it sort of insulates each separate holding.
Exactly. And that's what I do with my real estate. Each one is its own business, basically its own LLC and run its own tax returns and that type of thing. So it's more paperwork, but it's set up that way. And it's really just the administrative headache of getting everything set up the first time. But then once you set it up, it's pretty easy, but you know, for liability reasons. Let's talk about taxes. And first of all, with some of the more recent tax changes, you just mentioned a couple, but what's come out of the latest tax legislation?
First of all, a recent survey has said that there are many small business owners and certainly many consumers who are really unfamiliar with what's in the new tax law, and they really don't even know how it's going to impact them. And that's kind of a shame because we're already into the fifth month of the year, and you know, you can maybe make decisions and choices and actions based on the new law if you know what's in there. So, for example, one of the changes for businesses is that you cannot deduct any entertainment costs. So if you take a customer out to the theater or to a ball game, you can't write off the cost of the tickets, period. That's it. Now, there's a dispute as to whether that also would cover taking a customer or client out to lunch or to dinner, which we've traditionally done. We know that for years and years, that's something that we do in the course of business. And there has been a 50% limit on what you can write off. But now there's considerable sentiment that you can't write off anything. But we don't know exactly. We're waiting for IRS guidance. And the point for many is that you really need to be keeping the records all along so that you can act appropriately if the IRS comes down favorably on this, saying that, well, certain meals will qualify, certain meals will not. That's one thing. Another thing is that employee business expenses are no longer deductible, zero. So if you are an employee, you're a remote employee working from a home office, no deduction. If you pay out of pocket, you drive your car on company business, no deduction. But there is a way around this for employees. If a company sets up an accountable plan to reimburse you in the appropriate way, you don't have income from the reimbursement. The company gets to deduct the costs. And so it's a win-win, no employment taxes involved. It's not even reported on your W-2. But again, it's up to the company, the employer, to set this up and for employees to follow the rules.
Wow. See, these would be good to know about, wouldn't they? And that's a big one too. I mean, for as a business owner myself, the entertainment piece is a big piece of this because that's how I get new business. And that's a big part of it. So the fact that just to be more aware now of those costs or those expenses, maybe just to be more aware that this may not be a tax write-off. So is it worth it?
Exactly. So is it worth it? And yeah, we have to think twice about that.
Absolutely. Anything else? Any other big ones from this latest tax code?
One of the things that's really, and this is probably great for businesses that own real estate, a whole new slew of rules in terms of depreciation and under that umbrella, bonus depreciation and first year expensing. For example, you can now write off the cost of a new roof air conditioning system and many other components in the building. What a great thing. Just pay for it now and you don't have to depreciate it over years and years and years. You just can take a write-off. We have 100% bonus depreciation this year. So property qualifying for that, you get a full write-off. We have first-year expensing, $1 million limit. And again, with bonus depreciation in the past, it didn't apply to used pre-owned property. Now it's for new or used property. So, and again, keeping in mind that the write-off can be claimed whether you finance the purchase in whole or in part. So you can take a mortgage and pay for a new roof and you can still write it off regardless of what you're doing with the mortgage. But, you know, that brings me to another aspect of the new law, which is that there's now a limitation on how much interest you can deduct as for business. There is a small business exception. So the small business exception will cover a lot of gross receipts for the average annual gross receipts for the three prior years don't exceed $25 million. You're a small business and you get to write off your interest expense. But if you're above that, you're essentially limited to 30%. So, you know, that's and you can carry forward, but the rules get complicated, just another complication, but it's another thing that impacts a business decision, meaning, well, I need this. Should I seek some more equity financing rather than taking a loan? In other words, bringing in more investors, maybe use crowdfunding. I mean, there's so many considerations. So the point I tried to make earlier, I think, is applicable here, meaning that you have to know what the tax rules are so you can make proper business decisions.
You know, and just listening to you, of course, I just learned my own lesson. That's why I'm reading your books and I'm going to become as knowledgeable as I can because there's a lot of money when it comes to taxes. And really just understanding the way I think most of us, probably even especially business owners, small business owners, because we don't have a tax department or we don't have that part of the business that actually takes care of those concerns. You know, we're trying to do it all as small businesses one way or another. What we do is we pay a few $1,000s at the end of the year, file our taxes, to pay our quarterlies, to do these different pieces. But then, basically, you get everything done at the end of the year. You send it to your CPA. You pay anything that you think you owe, or year as to you didn't think you collected enough based on how the tax returns come out. And then you're done. And then you do the same the next year. I mean, just the big awareness here. And of course, it seems so obvious after the fact now that I realize my own mistake. But you're right. Like, this is it's a big part of finances that you can be really responsible with the rest of your money, like myself. But if you're missing this tax piece, there's probably a lot of mistakes or a lot of money that's misallocated or by just ignoring it.
Giving the government more than you really need to. And we're talking about really just using the tax rules appropriately, legitimately. We're not talking about skirting anything. We're talking about here's an opportunity for you. Take advantage of it.
All right. So where do you see small business owners? Again, that's going to be most of my audience. And so where do you see, and I'd say most of my audience, they're going to have gross revenue for the businesses, probably somewhere on the low end, about $500,000, sort of just the individual real estate agent, if you will. Anywhere up to probably 10 million, but probably more the 5 million mark as far as gross revenue small business. So let's just use that as the benchmark. Where do you see small businesses making the biggest mistakes when it comes to taxes?
The biggest mistake that small businesses make has to do with the most boring subject in the world, which is record keeping. They incur legitimate expenses, but without good records, they can't take the write-offs, especially when it comes to something like the business meals, as we're talking about, or really just about anything. You make a charitable contribution, unless you follow the rules. Contribution may be completely appropriate, but unless you have written acknowledgement required for a contribution of $250 or more, no write-off, period. That's it. So I see a lot of businesses making mistakes with this. It's really silly these days because there are so many apps that can help you. I mean, you can just keep this record keeping on the fly with, you don't have to know anything about numbers or taxes or accounting or anything. You just input expenses in on these apps and it's sort of no brainer. So there's really no excuse. And it really is easy these days as compared to the old days with handwritten logs and expense accounts and such.
What does IRS need to see? Like, is it, so for example, if I take a client out to lunch and I write that off, I put their name on the top of the receipt, I take a picture of it, and then I put it in an Evernote that's called tax receipts. I mean, is that good enough? Or what is record keeping when it comes to the IRS?
That's kind of the thing that we're not really sure on is whether we're going to be able to write it off. But certainly the business discussed the purpose of the meeting to discuss something, to address an issue, request future business, that kind of thing, I think would be extremely helpful. The information that you do need to keep with respect to travel and cars and those types of expenses, I list them in my book, J.K. Lasser's Small Business Taxes, and it's also in IRS publication 463. So there's a table just showing the kinds of information that you have to keep track of.
That's in this book?
That's in the Small Business Taxes book.
Okay, great. Yeah, because that's always been the question, even that I have, is that I don't really know what good record keeping is that all of my travel is work-related, or I make it work-related one way or another, do some work there. So it does become a business expense. And it flows through my business. I don't have that on my personal books. You know, that would be on a business credit card and be part of my business expenses. But again, I don't really know, do I need to keep all those receipts for business just like I would on a personal side? Or, you know, what is good record keeping? Do I need to say this was for this or that?
Keep the records. And especially as you say, it's easy. You just scan a lot of the receipts and you don't need the papers to stack up. And that's acceptable. But again, check out some of the apps that are available for these kinds of expenditures. And then it becomes even easier because some of them, for example, tracking business use of your personal vehicle. If you use an app for your mileage, it's GPS governed. So it just automatically has the date, the destination, the odometer and such. And you just have to put in the purpose of the trip and who you went to see and that kind of thing.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it really makes it easy. And there are so many apps, some of which are free. They come with, some are add-ons to things like QuickBooks, and some are, they're low cost. I mean, you're talking a few dollars for the forever.
Well, I'm going to check that out because it sounds, and I don't know why it hasn't occurred to me, probably because I've just done it one way forever. I mean, it's nice that you can take a picture and just upload it into a file somewhere. But if there's an app that makes it even simpler, I don't know why that hasn't occurred to me because I'm pretty much an app junkie, but all right. So good record keeping. Anything else that you notice as far that you see quite often when it comes to small business owners making?
The biggest challenge that I see these days for small business owners has to do with staffing. And we're in a tight labor market. Employers that need people and they need them to grow or to handle the business that they have, what do they do? And I think that I think business owners have to understand the difference between having an employee and what it costs to have an employee in terms of added costs for payroll taxes, for employee benefits, versus engaging an independent contractor or going through a temp agency or other going online through the various platforms for freelancers and using people in that way, remotely perhaps. You have to really kind of understand what it means as a practical matter. Is it important for your business to have employees there full time and to grow with them and keep them? Or can you do with other options? And again, just circling back to taxes, to be sure to handle your employment taxes. You have to treat workers correctly. You can't just put a label on somebody and say, poof, you're an independent contractor. If they're really under your control, they're your employee and you're responsible as an employer for the payroll taxes and providing benefits if you provide them to other workers. So I think that's a big issue these days. And I think for small businesses, it's especially problematic given that larger companies now with a flat 21% tax rate that are flush with cash and offering all these bonuses and pay raises and bloated menu of benefits. You know, what are we going to do as small business owners to make it worthwhile for people to work for us?
Yeah, that's good. And what's some of the criteria to a small business owner to hire independent contractors? Where's that? I know it's not black and white, but what is the IRS looking for where it's okay that they truly are an independent contractor? It's like, no, they're really an employee. You're just filing as an independent contractor.
First of all, I want to observe that there are different criteria used by different governments, like federal versus state. Different federal agencies use different criteria. In other words, you could be an independent contractor for IRS federal employment tax purposes, but be an employee for state unemployment insurance. So it gets very complicated. The overall umbrella is a matter of control. So if you are in this situation, controlling when, where, and how the work gets done, the person working for you is likely to be an employee. But there are various factors. You look at behavioral and financial and the intent of the arrangement. And certainly, if you're engaging someone to do a particular project for you that has a finite, you know, a beginning and an end, and you're paying a flat amount, and they're out there doing it for you on their own and then turn the work into you, they're likely an independent contractor. But if someone is sitting at a desk that you provide and working indefinitely, they're probably an employee.
Right. But again, like with anything tax code, there's never a black and white. It's all...
There are nuances, for sure.
Some nuances, some interpretations, and we're not quite sure if we can write off lunches or not. But, you know, anyway, it's flowing. It's not something that's concrete and definite. And
well, the states are getting very active in this, and a number of states have now adopted this ABC test. And essentially, I think this was sort of born out of the Uber, Lyft kind of situation, that if a person working for you is kind of essential to your business, that it is your business, and the states are moving in that direction to ensure that companies provide unemployment insurance and workers' compensation. But we'll have to see. This is developing.
It's a whole new era. All right. And anything else just when it comes, you know, with when you see people just making some more obvious or glaring mistakes?
Yeah. One of the things that I see a lot of in small business is that many of business owners fail to take advantage of qualified retirement plan opportunities. I've seen it personally that many small business owners think that they're going to develop their business and their business is going to be their retirement plan. And unfortunately, I saw one person during the prior economic turndown basically have nothing to show for all his efforts for many, many years. And he was forced to relocate, and it was a bad story. So the bottom line is, business owners should set up qualified retirement plans for themselves and to cover employees and to offer this as an employee benefit. And there are ways to do it that a lot of businesses are shy in this regard because they think it's going to cost them so much. But there's a tax credit to help you defer administrative costs and the cost of educating employees. And you get to deduct any employer contributions in their plans that you can set up where you really shift the onus to employees, like 401ks, where companies are not required necessarily, depending on the plan, of course, to make any contributions. So again, to think about personally as a business owner, you better protect your retirement future.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I'd say a lot of those that would be listening in here, that just by the nature of their small business, you know, they're generating most of the revenue for the company through their own personal work, and probably the administrative and other help they have would be mostly contractor, you know, by having one or probably maybe a handful of contractors. So ultimately, they're not going to have a big employee base. And so it just makes it that much easier to set up some of these qualified benefit plans for really just a sole owner. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there are so many options. There are so many varieties of retirement plans that you can use depending on where you're financially situated currently, your age and everything else. So
it's just something to look at. And so, you know, we'll ask him some more questions, but you bring up a good point, even if you're not really trying to. What is your recommendation for getting this type of advice? So like, I have a financial strategist I work with. I mean, I'm looking at my money all the time and my numbers and very intentional about how I invest and what I'm doing. But at the same time, even though I'm very knowledgeable and good at that, I have really an advisor that double checks my thinking. And, you know, he's much smarter than I am when it comes to this. That's what he does for a living. So, but we have conversations and he helps me think things or look at gaps and that type of thing.
But my point is, we're in regular conversations. You know, I mean, I talk to them minimum once a quarter, if not more, for specific questions. But again, I have other type of financial relationships in my life. I'm so serious about my money, but I don't have that with a CPA. So do you recommend that? I mean, and I don't think CPAs are really, at least in my experience, I haven't found one that they want to have that type of relationship. Really, they're just there to file tax returns. What do you recommend on the tax front? I mean, there's your work, of course, and your books and everything that you're doing for someone like me to stay current. But what about the relationship piece? What do you recommend there?
Well, I would say that if your current CPA is not providing tax information on a regular basis and not asking you questions on a regular basis, are you doing this? Have you thought about that? Then it's time to find a new CPA. CPAs can be invaluable to small businesses. They can really suggest ways of doing things. For example, just having the conversation about whether to change your entity choice. That's a major conversation. And to keep you apprised, IRS guidance on many of the issues that we've talked about today, oh, they just said this about business meals, better do that. If you don't have the kind of CPA who's going to provide you with this ongoing conversation, then I think that you got to change CPAs.
Thank you. I mean, that was my hunch. And really, I just fired this my last CPA just because.
I mean, some are wonderful tax return preparers, but yeah. I think as business owners, we're missing an opportunity to be continually guided and educated about what we should be doing. Because that's not our expertise. Our area of expertise is the business that we run.
Exactly. And it's part of business ownership and business profit that tax is a big part of the profitability. And that's how we feed our families. And not to have that type of consultation and that relationship is a big glaring missing piece for me. And I just thought about it. I had a different type of thinking. I just didn't want to deal with my taxes. And so I was hoping he was taking care of it. And again, the onus is on me. It's my money. It's my life. It's my children. It's my future. And I'd really love, you just gave me really permission to say, no, go find a relationship, a CPA that's really going to be in this journey with you and keep you apprised of certain things, or at least be on the other side of a phone with incompetent and saying.
And find an arrangement where you're not going to be feel like that you can't call up, because every time you call up, the clock is ticking, like the taxi.
Yeah.
You don't want that kind of relationship. You want a kind of arrangement where you can have regular meetings. It's all built into your arrangement.
And do you have any advice for how to find that type of CPA? I mean, that's a difficult question, probably not, but.
No, it's nearly not that hard, I think. I think for many business owners, we're members of our local chambers. I've always found that one of the best places to always ask the question is your banker. Wherever you bank for business, they know everybody in the neighborhood and they know who's good, who's not good. And I think referrals are obviously the best way to go.
Well, that's great advice, the banker. I'm like, that's so good. Okay, I'm going to start there. And anybody listening, I'm looking for a really great CPA. So if you have any recommendations here in Austin, Texas, or doesn't matter where they are, but at least familiar with Texas. All right, so let's talk about even independent contractors and freelancers. There are so many today that even if it's not their main job, it's their side gig, additional revenue stream, and or a spousal income. So what do you see there? Where are independent contractors, freelancers missing out?
Well, one of the biggest problems, I think, is that for people who have been W-2 employees their whole lives, they're used to having income taxes withheld from their paycheck. And when you become an independent contractor, all of the tax responsibilities are on you. You have to pay your income taxes and your self-employment tax to cover your Social Security and Medicare taxes on your net earnings, your profits. And you have to do that through estimated taxes, which is a special tax payment 4 times a year to the Treasury. And it's up to you to figure out what you got to pay and remit the money. And I think that this is a big problem for many people. And the thing is, if you think about it, you may be able to avoid having to pay estimated taxes. And if you're married and your spouse has a job, maybe your spouse will increase withholding to cover your tax bill. Or if you have a job and a sideline business as an independent contractor, you can change your own withholding to cover your sideline tax obligations so you don't have to pay estimated taxes. But you need to think about that because you don't want to fall short. If you fall short, you're going to be penalized. And with interest rates rising, the cost of falling too short can become substantial.
Yeah, those penalties interest add up very quickly. So yeah, great advice on that. And that's part of when my money students, I'm a money coach, and when they work with me, that's a big thing since I work with so many small business owners and solopreneurs, freelancers, is that's a big thing. We're going to sweep money right off that top for that tax percentage, and we're going to hide it and put it in another account.
Well, that's the point. What happens is maybe they know they have to pay estimated taxes, but come the date due and they don't have any cash because $1,000 came in the door and they thought they had $1,000 to spend. And no, you have to set aside a portion of that to cover your taxes.
Yes. And it's better to, in my opinion, just to be a little bit over and be safe than it is to not have enough. And then, and just to make sure to pay those quarterlies also, because those quarters sneak up very quickly. Anything else when it comes to freelancers, independent contractors, some side income? I never thought of that really, that you can increase your, you know, your employer deductions, but I'm not really in, I've never even had a regular job in my life. So when it comes to corporate or employee, I'm completely ignorant there. I've just always been on the business side, but that's really great advice.
Well, I think also you want to, if you are self-employed exclusively, you want to make sure that you have insurance, health insurance, and a business owner's policy. I think people in business in general might want to think about business interruption coverage. I'm in Florida in Hurricane Central, and the hurricane season starts June 1st, and businesses should be thinking about whether they have need or have flood insurance, which is separate. And so there are a lot of risk management considerations. So it's beyond just taxes. I think you have to look at the totality of running your business. And that's certainly a big aspect.
A big aspect. And you make another great point that when I look at a lot of my clients' books and financials or their portfolio, big gaping gaps when it comes to insurance. And they're just so at risk. Yeah, way beyond taxes. So that's, again, taxes and insurance are really those two ugly words that you just don't want to really think about and put off. And they're really critically important to wealth building and financial security in the long run, maybe the most important things, actually.
Absolutely. And disability insurance, if you are self-employed, nobody's going to send you money if you become laid up for quite a while. And that's another kind of insurance to look into.
Yeah. And that's usually the biggest one I see missing for my high income earners, that they don't have disability. And anyway, but absolutely, taxes and insurance, two important conversations or things to be aware of. And
not the most fun conversations. I think that's part of the problem, is that it's so much more fun to talk about marketing and social media and growing your business and just the upside of it. But it's really the back office kind of nuts and bolts that really determines your success, what you have to keep after tax and protection for, you know, the unintended events that happen. And I think that's so critical.
Agreed. You're right. It's not sexy by any means. But you make a good point, too. We're talking about all this marketing and social media and how to maybe make more money when we don't really have these more fundamental nuts and bolts pieces figured out yet. So that's like the cart before the horse. Let's work on these pieces, get them set up, structured, get those relationships set up, and then we can focus on some of these other aspects of business that can help us make more money and, you know, grow the business that way. So you're exactly right. What do you see, or do you see opportunities for those that actually have a small business, but there's probably a lot of expenses on their personal books per se that could actually be business expenses? So they're maybe not deducting as much as they could. Is there anything that you, if you were to look at, you know, their business QuickBooks and their personal QuickBooks and say, oh my goodness, there's so much over here that's after tax expenses that we could move on your business books?
Well, I think one of the first things, which is critical, is just to keep your personal life and your business life separate. And I think so many small business owners, especially when they start out, they have one bank account for personal and business. They have one credit card that they charge business expenses to. And so the first advice is just to separate your business life from your personal life when it comes to money, so that it becomes easy to track. And then be sure that you're treating expenses appropriately. So if you're buying supplies, it's for business, and you're going to pay for it out of your business account. I think that is the first step to ensuring that you're going to maximize your write-offs. Because when people start out businesses, they have that one account and they say, oh, I'll remember, which is the business expense and which is the personal expense. And the bottom line is, you don't start doing your taxes till more than a year after you've had these expenses, and you don't remember, and you don't have the receipts, and you haven't done the right things to be able to take the write-offs. So again, treat the business separately and funnel all your income and expenses through your business accounts.
That's probably the best piece of advice. And I see the same thing also. It's just the commingled funds. And I'm like, ah. And to really think like a business is for, you know, part of the coaching is that, okay, this is a business. It's separate than your personal. So pretty easy when you think about this, like this really is part of the business or could be, then treat it that way. Like some way at the end of the day, if it's helping you make money and it's just not a personal expense, it could very well funnel into the business side of things. Anything to say, you know, one thing I love about real estate, for example, as an investment is, you know, there is so much great tax strategy that can come with it. I mean, of course, we have the depreciation we have, but there's things that the supplies and buying a shovel when I need to go take care of an investment property and that type of thing. Do you have any thoughts on real estate as tax strategy?
I think you have to look at these complicated regulations that came out several years ago on repair versus capital improvement and what you can write off now. And there are, even if it's capital improvements, there are so many rules that you can use to take immediate write-offs. And it just simplifies your record keeping and gives you the tax break right up front. And so these are the kinds of things, again, circling back to working with a CPA, that the CPA should advise. Oh, you have a building and it's worth $1 million, a little building, and you're putting in X into improvements every year. Well, you know what? You might qualify for safe harbor and write them off entirely because it's a small building. And so again, you have to kind of know what the options are.
Yeah. And even, you know, it's real estate. One thing I do is, like you said, there's an LLC for each one, and I really run a P&L for each business. And so that way each one has a credit card and each one has the expenses to that are really associated with that. So that if there is or are any expenses, deductible expenses or expenses, that I can treat that as a business. And then obviously I just pay myself on the profit, and then that's that taxable income. It's just really starting to think of these different elements as opportunities for tax strategy, really. But it's, you know, part of the coaching there is looking at your whole life as a business in these different categories versus just maybe the small business over here. What's our portfolio that is life strategy, and tax strategy is a big part of that. Making sure we're insured and protected is a big part. Making an income is a big part. Investment's a big part. But, you know, there's just all these elements. And even so, when I'm reading your book, I'm thinking, oh my God, I never thought I would read a tax book, but it's probably the first book I should be reading. It's like, oh, Christina, you know, take your own advice. Anything else? Is there, we're kind of coming up against our time here. Is there anything else that I haven't asked, but that you really like to share when you're in these types of conversations?
Well, I think that we need to keep an eye on Washington and our local governments and see what's going on with respect to taxes and other matters that can impact our business regulations and such. Congress is currently looking at tax reform 2.0, and they may make additional changes. And I don't know when, if they make the changes, will they be effective this year retroactively? Who knows? There are a whole slew of tax breaks for business that expired at the end of 2017. Will they be extended to 2018 retroactively? I don't know. But we have to keep an eye on all of these things and monitor them so that we don't miss out.
Great. Well, thank you. Well, one question I like to close all of my interviews with is I like to do a little myth busting, because we're all caught up in really just in the status quo, believing what's been told to us at some part in our life and never really questioning that. So when I bring these incredible experts like you on the air, I like to do a little myth busting. Is there any myth that's pretty blatant that you see in your professional or personal life for that matter that you'd like to bust?
That's an interesting question. I wish I had to have thought about it a little more. You know, one of the myths that I think that they go into their own business and they're going to have control. They're going to be able to set their own hours and do their own thing. And the bottom line is that the business runs us and we work longer than we ever anticipated. We have less flexibility in terms of time off and setting hours, taking vacations. I still think it's great to be a small business owner.
Agreed. That is a good myth though. You think, I mean, if all this flexibility is like, no, it's 24/7. but I totally agree. Well, thank you, Barbara. It's been so awesome talking to you, and thank you for your time. And
any advice, one piece of advice as far as people that maybe are listening like me for the first time and say, all right, I want to get a control. I want to start dabbling in this tax thing a little bit more. What do you recommend just to?
Well, I hope people will follow me and get my idea of the day and read my blogs and newsletter. They're all free and I will tip everybody off to what's happening tax-wise and other important matters for small businesses. So
I'm on there now and I'm just following you and learning from you. You've really inspired me and I'm going to get good as I can as someone that doesn't want to be in the tax business, just as a small business owner that's going to be responsible for her taxes. And it's through your work. So I just want to say a thank you for everything that you do and you're making it simple for me. And I appreciate your time here today. And hopefully I can reach out to you every once in a while if I get stuck somewhere.
You bet.
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
And so ends another episode of the Wealthy, Wealthy Life podcast, where Christina brings you unconventional, cutting-edge strategies from leading experts to optimize your wealth and your health. As a token of gratitude for listening, go to podcast.fallingformoney.com and download a free copy of her best-selling book, Falling for Money. If you're ready to change your relationship with money, head on over to podcast.fallingformoney.com and download your free copy today.